In this episode, I interview perinatal mental health therapist and licensed clinical social worker, Beth Warren, on the topic of past trauma, specifically sexual or reproductive trauma, and how it can affect and trigger women when they enter the process of motherhood, from pregnancy through postpartum. She outlines the various obvious and subtle ways this time period can cause survivors to relive aspects of their trauma and what they can do to abate these effects. From understanding the what and why to developing a truly trauma-informed birth team, this is an important topic not often brought to light, and I'm honored to be bringing further awareness for how survivors can educate and empower themselves so that this experience is the best it can possibly be. So let's go ahead.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Growing a baby, healing postpartum, making milk, your body's mineral needs are off the chart during these times. And that's why Dr. Leah and I swear by Relight by Redmond, the real salt people, an electrolyte powder packed with USA Mined unrefined sea salt and essential minerals like magnesium, calcium, and potassium. Unlike many popular electrolyte companies, Redmond is the only company who is completely transparent about their sodium source because they own and operate the mine. It's clean, delicious, and the perfect thing for labor, breastfeeding, and thriving in mom life. So go ahead and grab a sample pack to try all of the flavors or hand your trust over to me and start with strawberry lemonade. Go to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off. Hydration handled. All right, moms, seriously stop and listen because this is something you need to have in your diaper bag, at your house, in the car, or basically anywhere that you spend time with your kids. Active Skin Repair is the best natural skin healing product that I have ever found. It's a skin health company that makes non-toxic medical-grade sprays and gels to support skin healing by using something called hypochlorous acid, which mimics the natural healing response of the body that the body uses itself. It's very intelligent. It's an absolute game changer for a huge variety of skin ailments, including burns, cuts, scrapes, bites, rashes, stings, eczema, acne, and more. You know I love a product that works with our physiology, and this is definitely that. I use it on my baby, my dog, my acne-prone skin. It is such a smart product, and I think that you will love it. So head to activeskinrepair.com or the link in the show notes and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 20% off of your order. So again, use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 20% off, and I think you're going to love it. Hello, everybody. Okay, so on the podcast today, we have a very special guest, and I'm so happy that you're here with us. Beth Warren, you are a social worker and many other things, and I want you to introduce yourself to everybody so that we can figure out exactly how you've gotten to this place, and this is your area of expertise. Also, just a trigger warning, though, that to the beginning of this episode, that in case that this is a sensitive topic for anybody, we understand, and maybe you just skip it for now. Sexual assault is something that is not uncommon, unfortunately, but if you are not in the right place to listen, whether it's just not the right spot, or maybe your heart is feeling sensitive, then go ahead and skip. Okay. Otherwise, we will continue. So Beth, can you please introduce yourselves to everybody?
Thank you. And thanks so much for having me on. I'm really, really honored to be on your podcast, but also just to be talking about such an important topic. I also love that you gave a content warning, and as much as possible, I'll try to avoid any sort of provocative content or specifically triggering content. And really, I want to end with hope and empowering information that people can take away in terms of if they do have a history of sexual trauma and are thinking about conceiving or are currently pregnant or postpartum, things that they can do to have an empowered pregnancy and postpartum. So anyway, before I even introduce myself, I just want to say thank you for that. So my name is Beth Warren. I'm a psychotherapist in San Diego in a private practice. And I've been in this field for over 25 years, specializing in perinatal mental health and specifically reproductive trauma. And I've authored two books, the Pregnancy and Postpartum Mood Workbook is the first one. And then Healing from Reproductive Trauma is the second one. I'm in the middle of writing my third right now, which is going to be for clinicians who work with reproductive trauma, and especially from a trauma-informed space. And so I'm just really grateful to be here to be talking about this. This topic is so near and dear to my heart for a number of reasons, but especially, you know, we work with clients who maybe have reproductive trauma as their first traumatic experience, and or have had a history of trauma in the past and are now entering their reproductive journey, and trying to avoid further traumatization. And so that's why I love talking to people about how to be fully informed consumers and how to questions they might be able to interview their providers with, how to find care that truly is trauma-informed, et cetera. So glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you for that. I love it. And I will have your links of your website and books in the show notes so everybody can check those out. Kudos to you for going for a third. Writing a book is no joke.
It is not.
And so my goal with this episode is so that people who maybe just did not know that there is aspects of birth and postpartum and pregnancy that can be triggering if you've had a history of any kind of trauma, and then specifically, of course, if there is a history of sexual or reproductive trauma, and that there are things also that can be done in the preparation process, like you were mentioning about building a team that's truly trauma-informed, or even I think having maybe like some specific, well, you're going to get there about the different things that we can do. But I just want to draw attention to it because it has not, it's not an infrequent situation where I end up in conversations that of women who did not know that this would be something that would maybe bring up, you know, PTSD like memories or feelings that they couldn't quite place of, you know, uncomfortability and trigger being triggered that came from the trauma during birth. And in the middle of birth is not usually when we want to it to like dawn upon us that something like that is happening, ideally. And so for those that that's happened to already, you know, I'm so sorry. And hopefully this can be, you know, further a tool to spread and just spread awareness for people in the future. And those that are first time pregnant or thinking about it, and this is part of your story, then this is something to really think about and look into. Maybe nothing will happen, but in case it does, at least you won't be shocked by that. And actually that just brings up something, one more thing, which is that I feel like a lot of generalized birth trauma, this is part of my birth education goals when I am working with women, is to give them the full story, so that there aren't parts of the birth that are shocking, and that in and of itself being surprised and being shocked, I think is the root of sometimes why things can feel traumatic, because they just did not know that like there was a certain type of intervention or that it could be that fast. You know, you hear about the emergency cesareans that are like literally three minutes long. And I think when people don't know that, it can feel even more overwhelming. So if we even just have some base level education around, okay, these are all the possibilities of the things that can happen. Maybe that's not going to happen to you, but at least if it is, you're going, oh, wait a minute. In the back of your subconscious, you're like, wait a minute. I've heard of this. I knew that, or I knew, I know what to do now. Or maybe I've even taken the next step where I have a choice and I can navigate this decision. And I'm not feeling like paralyzed by it, just because I do think that that can be so helpful to reducing the overall like mass, you know, the tip of the iceberg, like the under the water, like the big mass of the trauma can be from that in and of itself alone. So anyways, that's sort of the goal of this. And, it's so exciting that this is your specialty too, because I feel like it's very, very niche.
Reproductive trauma. Yeah, it's absolutely my passion, and one that I feel very passionate about is the idea of how much can we prevent and or mitigate. And information is so empowering, isn't it? To your point. And having choice is so empowering. And even knowing what choices are available is so important. And especially when choice has maybe been stripped of you previously. And for survivors of any trauma, but especially sexual trauma, where choice has been removed from the equation, especially with bodily autonomy, it's really important to know what choices do you have available when it comes all throughout your pregnancy, your birth, and your postpartum experience, and especially when it comes to examinations and touch and pain and pain tolerance and medication, et cetera. It's so, so important to know what choices are available. So yeah, if it's okay to kind of zoom out first and talk about sexual trauma and then zoom in. So, you know, generally one out of five women, and of course, just recognizing that not everyone who becomes a parent is a woman and has had sexual trauma, but one out of five women have a history of sexual trauma, whether it's sexual trauma as a child and or sexual assault or both. Going into a pregnancy with a history of sexual trauma does put you at higher risk for having worsening or new trauma symptoms during pregnancy and the postpartum period, as well as, you know, also new depression symptoms, anxiety, any mental health symptoms. And I don't say that to scare people, but again, just as we start out, just to help inform and empower folks, because that is something I often do hear from my clients, to your point is, oh my gosh, I had no idea either this could happen or that things could worsen or that something that happened to me when I was 5 years old could then resurface. I, quote, thought this was behind me, or I thought I had worked on this, or I thought, you know, that this didn't have anything to do with birth, so I didn't think it would come up. And the thing about our reproductive journeys are it's so embodied. Like going through conception is an embodied experience. Infertility treatments are an embodied experience. Pregnancy, your body is changing so much. You're experiencing it all somatically. Your body sensations, all of the exams you're going through, pelvic exams, all the doctor's appointments, hormone changes, all of it is it being experienced on a somatic and body level. Your birth, of course, is all experienced on a bodily level. There's a lot of vulnerability there in terms of that, but also vulnerability in terms of vulnerability with your providers. And then, of course, the postpartum experience is also experienced so in such a bodily way, in such a somatic way. You're caring for your baby from your body, you're healing in your body. And then we can talk about this later in more depth, but intimacy is often changed for every person after having a baby. It can be impacted, but then especially when you have triggers and tenderness around touch and around sexual intimacy as well. So yes, all of that can be impacted.
Thank you for outlining all of that and the whole journey, because yes, it's, I always use the word visceral, but you said the word somatic, and I feel like that's a better term. Visceral makes me think of like just blood and guts, you know, but yes. Somatic, yeah, it is. It's such a very, very embodied time, the whole thing. And for somebody like me who has always sort of felt a little bit separate from my body, it's actually something I love about pregnancy and birth is being kind of grounded in my body. But I could imagine that if we have, and I think that's just because my mental energy is very, very high. Like I feel like I don't see what I'm looking at often because my thoughts are too loud or too bright. You know what I mean? I'm just in my head a lot. My life is mostly in my head. And when I'm pregnant, it's like, oh, I'm constantly feeling things in my body. And anyway, but I can see that if that is a sensitive spot, if that's a tender experience, then you're going to be continually reminded. And then with breastfeeding in postpartum, I mean, that's a whole other. Yeah, I love that you brought up all those points.
Thank you for sharing that. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, please go ahead.
I'm so grateful that you just shared that because that's a really important point. A lot of us might spend more time mentally than in our bodies for a myriad of reasons, but you'd name just busy brain, busy lives, that kind of thing. But you're right, for a survivor of sexual trauma, it also might serve a very protective function to not be tuned into the body. And so you're so, so right that then becoming pregnant, where there is movement inside of you and a changing body, and especially like your breasts are getting bigger, and maybe there's some confusion and discomfort with the fact that your breasts were also, you know, used in different ways, and like that there might be some mixed emotions and feelings around that, et cetera. Now there is maybe not as much ability to not tune into the body. Your body's like screaming at you. In other words, like, I am changing. Here are sensations that are new. And so we can sometimes see dissociation happening for people where they're like, not on purpose, but just really trying to tune away from their bodies, tune out from their bodies, numb out from their bodies, or even if we don't see disassociation, just such distress that like, gosh, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to tuning in or softening towards my body. This feels really unnatural for me. So I'm so glad you brought up that example. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Good. No, absolutely. Cut me off anytime. I love it. You have the wisdom to share here. So yeah, can you explain why birth can be sort of uniquely triggering for people that have a history with sexual trauma? What is it about birth?
Yeah, for a number of reasons. And I don't say this to pathologize birth, because birth is an incredibly natural and beautiful experience. And it can be uniquely vulnerable, because there is vulnerability around pain. There's vulnerability around working with providers. There's vulnerability around positioning, you know, being prone, for example. That means laying down, you know, I know you know that, but laying down for some people can be inherently vulnerable and or triggering. That's why, just as a side note outside of birth, that's why some survivors of both reproductive trauma as well as past traumatic experiences will get triggered when they go to the dentist's office and will later not be able to understand why. But it's no hate towards dentists. It's more just that, like, all the factors, you're laying down, there's pain, there's the feeling of vulnerability that you're not in control, you don't know what to expect. It's all of those kinds of things. And so think about that in birth, that it's all of those factors. Even when you're prepared and you've educated yourself and you've done a lot of reading, you've gone to classes, that there is still an unpredictability to the experience in terms of, gosh, I know thousands and millions of women have gone through this. I don't know what my birth experience is going to be. I know what my preferences are going to be. I don't know what is to come. And that is hard for every single person that gives birth to have some sort of surrendering. That is especially difficult when you have had, again, choice and agency stripped from you, and surrendering might feel full on like terrifying or powerless. And so that can be very much a focus of trauma therapy. And I know I'm kind of jumping to the end, but some of the work that we can do in advance and helping prepare.
Yeah, it is something that I find, in even without knowing their sexual assault or trauma history, I find in women who are very like sort of type A personalities and in control of their lives, and like maybe high achieving women, those types of personalities have a very hard time in birth and motherhood sometimes with that lack of control, because it is. I mean, it's hard for, I don't know if it's ever easy for anyone, but I do think there's varying degrees of difficulty with that. And it makes total sense that idea of the lack of control, the plus the body aspect of it, plus the kind of like being poked and prodded potentially, you know, there's like cervical exams, which you could, which I'm sure you're going to get there, but you know, you could forego, and with good reason too, if your team was informed, it might help them understand it. But I understand also if people don't really want to talk about that with their team, I'd love to know your opinion on that later. Like, how do we do that?
Let's definitely go there.
Yes. And then even just a contraction, like I always tell people when they're asking, like, you know, what does a contraction feel like? I've had all four of mine at home, and I'm like, well, it changes. And when it's at the peak, you're just, it's like you're on a train that you can't get off. Like, you are.
Ain't nobody letting you off.
Yep. You're just along for the ride. And so the faster that you can surrender, which is hard for anyone and would be very hard with this particular population potentially too, it does become easier, I think, because we're not trying to fight it. And it's also like, once it becomes routinized in your brain with all those hormonal cascades and loops, like there's nothing that you can do to stop it either. So until that baby comes out, like you will be in this very, and it's so amazing. Contractions are like 3 minutes and 32 seconds. Boom, 3 minutes and 32 seconds. Like, you know, and it just can, once it gets to that point where it's extremely consistent. And then bearing down, I mean, bearing down is a very, very, and pushing is a very vulnerable, viscerally or somatically vulnerable. It feels crazy. It's like this feeling of just, oh my gosh, this is happening. This is really happening. They're coming out. Even if there was nothing there. So the fact that, like, if there are sensations, and even just with, I've heard lots of stories, I'd love to know your opinion of this too, about trauma preventing the cervix even from opening, and women not being able to get to the point of being there as sort of a protective measure, or maybe being a component of it. And who really knows? Like, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't have a time machine to, like, go back and control for different factors. But I always think that that is really fascinating and interesting of the way that that could go. And then also just, like, you know, the language that could be used with your providers and what they're saying to you, how they're talking to you, if they're asking for in a true informed consent, which is a dying art. But I do feel like it's coming back based on demand of people being not okay with the way that things have been in the reproductive space, especially in this country where we have some of the highest mortality and, you know, mental health issues of our women, our mothers later on. But, you know, it's just like, I was a doula a couple summers ago for a friend, and it was a midwife team in a hospital, and they were so wonderful and amazing. And she'd have a contraction, and they would just, like, sit quietly and wait, and then really wait and wait until she, like, completely had stopped, and then was looking at them again, like, okay, what were you saying? You know, like, she was, they were just really respectful of what was happening and the time. And I just, you know, then I've been doulas in situations where they're almost trying to talk to you through a contraction. And it's a very, like, dynamic time period. So anyway, sorry, I just had to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that you said that I think is so lovely, you made some really good points, but I really want to highlight that idea of trauma-informed care. It is becoming almost like a trendy buzzword, but I think we're not often talking really about what does that actually mean. And I love, love, love that parents are, and parents-to-be, and postpartum parents are becoming more and more informed about trauma-informed care and demanding it. And I love working with providers. I provide a lot of trainings for birth workers and providers to help, and clinicians as well, to help keep honing our practices to truly be thinking about what really is trauma-informed care, how to ensure that we're providing trauma-informed care. And there's so many aspects to it. It's not that you just take a training or a certification and now you are a trauma-informed provider, but it really is this ongoing practice. And one of the things that you mentioned is really crucial is informed consent. And informed consent is not just a piece of paper that you sign when you get into the hospital that you agree and you see all the risk. You know, sometimes they're, like, really scary, all the things you're signing, and then you're done. Informed consent is an ongoing conversation, and that is really crucial. It's the idea of, do I feel like I've been briefed and informed of what is happening to my body and the options that are available to me? And as things change, because they can, but that happens with healthcare, that happens with our medical care, there it's a dynamic flow that then I'm briefed with what I can expect and what is happening, even in emergent situations. So in an emergent situation that might be more truncated, it's not going to be as long and drawn out, but it's still keeping someone informed, giving space for, do you have any questions? It's a flow. It's a back and forth dynamic thing. It's not just a piece of paper. And that is a really important aspect of informed consent. Asking permission before touch is a really important piece of that. And that should be truly a standard for every single person who is having a baby, who's pregnant, postpartum, going through infertility treatments, having a pregnancy loss, et cetera. But it is especially, I shouldn't even say, but is especially crucial for someone who is a survivor of sexual trauma. And I think it's great that you asked, well, yeah, but what about someone who maybe doesn't want to tell their provider their whole story? You don't have to. You don't owe anybody your story. I work with a number of clients that really want to tell their provider, their OBGYN, their midwife, what they've been through. It feels safe to do so, and they feel like it actually will really help inform their care all throughout. And the other option, by the way, is if you're working with a therapist like myself, you can always, with a signed release, have your therapist share your story if you're not wanting to do so, or have your doula share your story. You can have somebody else do so, so that there can be collaborative care. But you don't owe anybody your story. If it doesn't feel safe for you to talk about what happened to you, you do not have to. That's not a requirement. What you could do instead is a shorthand of it to say, I have a history of trauma and it's important for me to know what's coming. Please ask permission before touch. Please just check in with me to make sure that I'm understanding what's happening. Because one of the biggest things to know about a trauma response is when we're in the middle of a survival or trauma response, like fight, flight, freeze, fawn responses, we do not have oftentimes the capacity to speak up. And if we do, we're often not very articulate. You know, that's oftentimes where women will say like, oh my God, I totally lost my temper and I was so nasty and I really regret what I said. Or vice versa, with the fawn response, that's that please and appease response. You might look like a super compliant patient and super sweet and yes, yes. And oh, how are you? Like, how are you? Do you need anything? And then later really regret that. I wish I'd spoken up. I hated everything that was happening. Why was I checking on everybody else in the room when I was like feeling awful, you know? Mm-hmm. So in other words, it's important to have these conversations ahead of time so that then your provider can be on the lookout for those things, but also that you can just say, please slow things down. And also, you know, we can go into more things about birth preferences and doulas and stuff, but though that's really important. Those are two really important, crucial aspects of trauma-informed care. There's others too, but.
Yeah, I love that. Let's go into it. What are the things that correct me if I'm wrong, but the doula, because they're going to be by your side the entire time and the provider could be coming in and out, or if it's a home birth setting, you know, the midwife doesn't really show up for a long time, or, you know, you're not even admitted to the hospital for a while. It feels like maybe the doula should be the priority of finding a trauma-informed doula, but maybe that's not true. Maybe it should be everybody as a priority. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, if I had a magic wand, every single provider would be trauma-informed. Every single provider, even working with anybody in reproductive spaces, would be guiding their work with this lens. It is so, so crucial that we're doing this work with these lenses. So yes, working with a doula who has this as an inherent value system, trauma-informed care is an inherent value system, as a foundation is really useful. It doesn't have to be the case. Some people simply can't afford a doula or it's not available to them. So I say that just to acknowledge that that isn't always accessible for everyone, or maybe they don't want to. But yes, working with a trauma-informed doula is fantastic because then this person can be someone that is an advocate for you. You've spoken to them ahead of time about your birth preferences, your pain medication preferences, your touch preferences, and that they can be your voice if you are, for example, in that trauma response and not able to speak up, that they can do so for you. Hey, we had talked about that this isn't what she had wanted. Is that correct? You know, et cetera. If that's not available to you for whatever reason, a doula or a midwife that using your partner, if you're partnered, or a loved one to, again, have them as an ally or an advocate. Sometimes it's going to be your partner. Sometimes, God bless, your partner is also, let's just be honest, in it with you and can also be traumatized. And so sometimes you might want to be thoughtful about who could actually be engaged with you, attuned with you, and able to speak up. I've had some clients who have not elected to have someone with them in advance and done so the day of with their nurse and been really thoughtful of like disclosing with their nurse in the hospital, or again, with a home birth, done so with their midwife. You know, there's so many different ways to do this. In other words, the key thing I think is just being thoughtful of what are your preferences? What are the things that will help you feel in control? What are your choices that you went to up for, and then making sure that those around you know what those are to help back you up.
It's no secret that most women are not getting adequate protein in their daily diets. We need protein for all major body functions, including hormone production, to maintain a healthy, regular menstrual cycle. The requirements for protein only increase when we become pregnant, are nursing, and recovering postpartum. There are many options on the market for protein and collagen powders out there, and we understand that it can be tricky to vet all of the various brands and types. So let me make it easy for you. The Needed Collagen Powder is my top recommendation for an easy to mix, quick dissolving, and completely tasteless supplemental protein for many reasons. It's grass-fed, sustainably sourced, and has 14 grams of protein per scoop. It passes rigorous third-party testing for heavy metals contamination, and the company keeps this information transparent for the public. I mix mine into coffee, oatmeal, or smoothies almost every day. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Again, head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save. Mm-hmm. Yep. I love it. I think that the choice is really, really powerful. And even if, say, things are trending towards, like, you know, we've gone through different interventions and things are trending towards intervention, and when providers are able to include the woman and give the option and have her be part of the choice rather than being told this is what's happening. I mean, that's how it should be. Yeah. Standard, like, as you said, everybody should be trauma informed. This should always be the case unless it's emergent, of course. But I really think that that also is in a generalized birth trauma note, there is this idea that, like, being told and forced into doing something without having a choice is a huge component of it. And now if we're adding in this layer of bringing up past, you know, experiences where there was no choice, there was no conversation, yes, there was no ability, it's going to be that much more important for this to be the case so that there can be collaborative, you know, again, obviously, if it's safe, and 99% of the time it's going to be, you know, except for those few situations. But even in that situation, it doesn't take very long to communicate one or two sentences, a couple of things to say, this is what we really need to do right now, and we're going to do this. Yes. Because I've been in the room sometimes where the doctors and the nurses are talking about the patient right in front of them as if they're not there. Ugh. And it's, yeah, it's not okay. And it's, it just makes you feel so small and unimportant and like, hello, I can hear you. And I don't know. I just think there needs to be so much more conversation around the reverence for birth in general. And then how can we have even more awareness in the room where this is a patient that's experienced horrific, you know, experiences in the past, and make it so that it's empowering and maybe bring some like closed looped healing. I don't know. Do you see that ever, that there can be like a healing aspect to?
Oh yeah. Like a reparative experience.
Yes,
absolutely. And even if it's that, not that we've done therapeutic work on that in advance, although that too, but yeah, there is something very reparative and healing about, let's say, a provider who is listening to you and is respecting your agency and your choice, outlining options to you, and then believing you and listening to what you're wanting, or even to your point, in an emergency where options might be limited or not available, talking to you. Let me explain what's happening to you. This is what's going on. I'm talking to you as a human. I'm addressing you, as opposed to, you know, just all happening around you. What a setup for disembodiment and disassociation if things are all happening around you, but nobody's actually engaging with you. I've had so many clients who talk about the power of, you know, just a provider holding their hand and talking to them as something's happening, or just, let me explain to you what's going on right now. Do you have any questions? This is what's about to happen. Or even, you know, the power of just saying, like, okay, we're about to start your IV, and this is what that's going to feel like. And it's about to be a cool flush for a little bit. That's completely normal. I mean, we've all, as patients, been patients, and we've all had both experiences, right? Where you have someone that just explains what's going on and what to expect, and this is what this is, and this is what is normal. And then we've all had the difference where you're like, am I a slab of meat here? Like, what? what is happening? And so, yeah, that is, I always like to say trauma-informed care is like love. Like you, it sometimes can be difficult to describe it, but you know it when you've felt it, and you certainly know it when you haven't. And everybody, truly every single human being deserves trauma-informed care. And it's especially thoughtful to think about the negative impact on those with a history of trauma when they don't receive it because of all of these reasons. Yeah.
Right. Instead of it just being, oh, that nurse, you know, the doctor didn't have good bedside manner. Like that was annoying, whatever. No, that would be in the situation where maybe somebody did not have any trauma, and it's kind of like a annoyance. And that's all it is though. But then if there is this other history, it could make or break the entire experience.
It can compound it. Absolutely. There was a really important study where 60% of women who had had a traumatic birth experience report at the root of that was their interaction with their provider, not what actually happened to them. Meaning it wasn't like an emergent intervention or that they had a negative outcome or something like that. It was the negative interaction with their provider was the root of their trauma. And we absolutely see that things can get compounded when women have had a history of trauma themselves, like from childhood, sexual trauma, et cetera. And so when already there is a vulnerability to then have a potential negative interaction with a provider, not that it's the fault of the patient by any means, but that there is already this vulnerability, that's where it can be so important to find a good fit with a good provider that just does slow things down, make sure that it's feeling collaborative. Like we're here, I'm going to outline choices to you, make sure that you feel like you have an option, make sure that you know what's happening, how important that is to a nervous system that might otherwise start to feel pretty dysregulated and unsafe, you know?
It really highlights how human connectivity is such an important thread for like our entire lives and everything. And being communicated to and connected with the people around you is more important than what's even happening.
Isn't you know? That true? Mm. Oh, it's so true. I've had so many clients that have shared both experiences of, you know, a lactation consultant, for example, that was lovely and so supportive. And I'm here for you. And what are your goals? And I've got your back. In other words, like an ultimate hype woman, like I've got you, like what do we need to do? Like I will be here thick and thin, whatever we need to do. And then the opposite of like just coming in and just grabbing a breast and just like, or forcing an agenda where maybe that wasn't the client's goal and feeling kind of overheard and almost coerced into doing something. And I'm not bagging on lactation consultants. I'm using that as just an example of, like you'd said, that connection of just like sitting and connecting human to human. And that's why with a history of sexual trauma, permission before touch is so, so crucial, but also just knowing like, how can I help you? And as I say these things, doesn't it just sound kind of ludicrous that like this really should be the care for everybody like this? And it really should be. But I say these things because as I'm working with someone as they're pregnant or even just thinking about conceiving, as I'm saying these things, sometimes women are like, God, I hadn't even thought to ask for that or expect that. And so it's good to have these conversations, you know.
It really makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Truly. So what are some like practical ways that survivors could prepare for birth in a way that honors their history and their autonomy or, you know, for the pregnancy itself too? And maybe how early should we be starting in pregnancy?
Great question. And it's really going to be dependent on the person. I mean, you know, some people really feel safer the more prepared they are, having some sort of predictability, having information they're ready. And so some I will meet with for therapy ahead of time, ahead of conception, I mean, like maybe as they're even just thinking about it, recognizing that there's this vulnerability there. Especially maybe with a difficult relationship with their body and recognizing that this might be challenging, even just going into conception and pregnancy. Others might feel like, okay, I feel like I'm kind of at a good place, but I'll reach out for either therapy and or to my OBGYN, my midwife, my doula, if and when things come up. I typically, though, recommend earlier the better, because then you have awareness of what to expect. You have a team that you're starting to build. And in worst case scenario, if you're finding that the conversation with your provider isn't going as you had hoped, then you also have time to pivot and you have time to find somebody else. So I think that's really crucial.
Yeah. What would be the red flags you'd say to be watching out with a provider that would sort of signal you that the birth setting is not going to be safe for somebody who's had this sexual assault in their history?
I think the biggest red flag is you. You are the expert on you. And if, not that you're the red flag, that came out weird. Morgan, you're a red flag. No, if your spidey senses are telling you something is up, I trust you. And if you are feeling unheard, if you are feeling overpowered, coerced, minimized, invalidated, if you are just feeling that flush in your body, like you're embarrassed and embarrassment, if you're too much, if you are asking for too much, all of those are good indicators that, P.S., it's not you, that you're in a space where you're being made to feel that way. I mean, I could probably go on and on. There's certainly blatant ones too, but I think the biggest red flag monitor is within you.
And do you, okay, so let's pretend that you have a client, like sort of an ideal client, an avatar. She has a history of some kind. She gets pregnant. She is just sort of maybe learning about the fact that this is something that she should work on and maybe doesn't have a strong history of doing lots of therapy.
Yeah.
What kinds of therapeutic tools maybe, or nervous system regulations or somatic therapy, or you know what I'm saying? Like, what kinds of things would you want her to maybe learn about and pick and choose a few and start to explore? Or for the people who are listening that are like, what do I do now, though?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. The thing to know is not everybody's going to need therapy, but therapy is always an option. And trauma therapy, when we are talking about therapy, I always recommend that you're doing trauma therapy that has a specific focus on the body. Because again, not only was sexual trauma so embodied, but the whole journey in reproductive the whole reproductive journey is so embodied too. And so always seeking out someone who has a specialty in reproductive trauma, specialty in sexual trauma, a specialty in perinatal mental health, any of those would be really useful. It's always an option. And even in the postpartum period, it's never, ever, ever too late. So for example, I'll see women sometimes who went through their whole pregnancy, birth, postpartum, but now their child is the age that they were when they were sexually assaulted, and that now brings up a whole host of vulnerability, and maybe now they're having intrusive images, or they're feeling a sense of avoidance and doing things like diaper changes or bath time, or maybe it's the opposite. It's not avoidance now; it's hypervigilance, and they're checking multiple times or not allowing anybody else to do caregiving, even if logically they know their partner is safe. They don't want anybody else to be involving. And so that might be a flag for them to come in for therapy. But I love your question that, what else might be really useful? Because all of this is so embodied and somatic, and because you were even sharing that for other reasons, that sometimes you're more in your head, and that your pregnancy was such a softening and an opportunity to tune into your body, because that is often not a comfortable or safe experience for survivors of sexual trauma to be able to tolerate. Any sort of body work can be really useful for that. And it can be, it's almost like when you're at a cafeteria and you're like, I will take the Jell-O, I will take the mac and cheese. There can be so many options. It can be really tailor-made to what fits for your busy lifestyle, but also what really feels most comfortable for you. And things like breath work, like listening to an app, a meditation app that has like slowed breath, or going to a yoga class. I always recommend classes that have more of a trauma-informed focus. Trauma-informed yoga tends to be much more hands-off. They don't touch you. They don't give you like
adjustments.
Yeah. Adjustments. Thank you. I was like, what's the word? And they also give lots of options. Like instead of just eyes closed, you can also have your gaze softened and you can do this and that. It's lovely because it really gives and supports bodily autonomy. But yoga helps you to be tuning into your body in mindful ways. Even things like walking and doing so mindfully as opposed to listening to a podcast and distracting yourself or simultaneously doing something else. Just trying various ways to start kind of softening your relationship with your body can be really helpful. So, you know, again, guided meditation apps, breath work, yoga, stretching, aspects like that, swimming, things that involve the body can be really useful. And if you're finding that that's hard to tolerate, it's okay. It's also really understandable. And that's where therapy might be helpful to interweave.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really interesting. Like maybe just starting out with some being in the body more during the whole process and see how that, where that takes you. You were mentioning breath work, and there is an app that's called, or a company that has an app called Expectful, which is kind of like the Headspace app that, I don't know if you use this with your clients or.
No, I didn't know.
And it's for like the perinatal health space, infertility, fertility, pregnancy, birth prep, everything. So it's like mindfulness meditations. And I believe, I mean, I might be wrong, but I do believe that they have breath work.
Thank you, it's all for
pregnant women. Yes. So it's called the Expectful app. So that I'll put that in the show notes so that people can check out. The Headspace app does also have some breathwork stuff in there. And I know there's several others that you could even just like YouTube. So people don't have to go out and necessarily spend a bunch of money on things. It can be small. It can be accessible. And
yes,
but still have like a big profound impact. What about EMDR? Do you think that it's, is there anything that's not safe to do in pregnancy because you are pregnant and we like don't want to go too much too deep? I think there's going to be people who wonder that, like, should I not do this because I'm already pregnant?
I love that you're asking this question because that is a really common question. I get asked, I'm certified in EMDR therapy. I'm a consultant and I facilitate trainings. All the research shows that EMDR is both safe and effective for pregnancy and for postpartum. And it is understandable because it helps reduce cortisol. It helps reduce stress hormones. It helps reduce PTSD symptoms, distress, intrusive imagery, fear of childbirth, all the things that can be held and experienced during a pregnancy. And so it is great that you're asking that because oftentimes people think erroneously, if I'm doing trauma work during therapy, does that mean it's going to like peel back the layers and make it worse? And I often like to just gently say, what's it like now not doing trauma therapy? And trauma therapy, the whole point of it is to not make it worse, but to actually help reduce and help build that window of tolerance so that you can greater feel your feels, so to speak, but not be in an overwhelmed state, not be in a fight, flight, freeze, fawn response.
Wow, that's so, I love that you said that in that way, because that's probably something people think in opposite a lot, like you just mentioned.
It is. And even therapists, sadly, will think that.
Yeah, and it's like Pandora's box. You know, like they're just like, oh, nope, can't go there. Like, I don't want to do that. Like, let's not do that. But if we can start to have space and in the right setting where we're supported, it's only going to, as you said, you know, like, well, how does it feel now? It's like mic drop sort of situation. We need to be doing things. Can you just quickly, briefly explain what EMDR stands for and what would the patient actually be doing? So for those that haven't heard of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR, super mouthful. Why we say eye movement is we use bilateral, typically eye movements, although it's not always eye movement, bilateral meaning right, left. So sometimes it's tapping. Sometimes it's holding on to little buzzers in your therapist's office that are bilateral, like tapping right, left, right, left. Sometimes it's you tapping yourself. For those who aren't on YouTube with us, I'm tapping like my shoulder, right, left, right, left. But essentially it's bilateral tapping to tap into both right and left hemispheres of the brain, as well as mind and body. as you're thinking about a disturbing memory or a present day thing that is triggering and activating to you. Like, let's use the example of when I was talking about the diaper change, how that can be triggering and activating for some people, that then we would just think about that briefly. And then the tapping, and we would just keep checking in as it's slowly decreasing. And what is really neat is it's not just the desensitization of it that happens, where it's not just turning down an intensity, in other words, but what's really cool about that is that your brain starts to make associations and starts to find patterns and bring in more adaptive and helpful information. And so it's really neat to see people have this kind of shift in their thinking in terms of, like, I don't know, let's use a random example of, like, well, yes, that was the age my child is the age that I was, but I am a completely different mom. I am alert, I'm engaged, I'm on top of things. It's so neat to see all these, like, very spontaneous thoughts start occurring to people. And I'm staying out of the way. It's not that I'm saying it. It's not like I'm saying, hey, by the way, you are a different mom. Like, you are, you know, it's so neat.
Simply from them just activating the brain hemispheres and then thinking about it. Wow. That, for some reason, I thought, I haven't done it. I think that it would be fascinating. Yeah. But for some reason, I thought there was a component of, like, replacing maybe, or trying to insert, you know, thinking about the traumatic event and then replacing it with maybe a different story or, like, a more positive thought, or I don't know, some, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that there was something to do with that aspect. I did not realize it was simply, like, allowing it to become less of, you know, have a chokehold on you. And it just can be a little like, okay.
Yeah.
And then now there's new popping thoughts as well.
That's it happens very, very organically. It's neat to kind of stay out of the way, and that I'm not saying, well, this is how you should think about it. And even the client themselves aren't doing that. They certainly, in advance, we might talk about how might you want to think about this instead, or how would you rather be able to cope with the diaper changes, for example. But no, during it, it's really neat to just see what our clients' brains will come up with. Our brains are so fascinating, so resilient, so capable of healing. And so I always like to think of EMDR as just being like the little nudge. And then our brains just kind of know what to do instinctively, but it's bringing in the body. It's not just talk therapy. It's not just using insight-oriented prefrontal cortex. It's using the entire brain, the mind and body. Because when we've been traumatized, when something really difficult has happened to us, our prefrontal cortex, our insight, our logic has nothing to do with this. We can't talk ourselves out of a trauma response. We can't talk ourselves out of something awful that has happened to us. Logically, I can say, I am an adult now. I know I'm safe. That should have never happened to me. That was not my fault. But my body, unfortunately, still gets triggered when I'm in these certain situations. So why is that? Why is there this mind-body disconnect? So it's really helpful to bring both together.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can't just think of one situation where that wouldn't be helpful. Yeah. That's fascinating. Okay. Well, Beth, this has been amazing. I have one last question for you, which is that, you know, for someone who's listening, who has a history of sexual trauma and is pregnant or trying, you know, they're planning to be, what would you want her to know the most? Like, what would be something you'd want to leave her with?
Oh, I like that question.
Not to put you on the spot.
I don't mean to be repetitive, but I think it's important. It's just, I trust you. You're the expert on you, and you have been through something tremendously difficult. And as you are finding your way and trying to reconnect to your body in new ways, I hope that you can start learning to trust yourself too. You know, I hope you can find a good team.
Oh, huge. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Are you pregnant or trying to conceive and looking for reliable, engaging education around how to have a healthy pregnancy and prepare for the future aspects of motherhood to come, like birth, breastfeeding, and postpartum? Well, then look, I've got you. This is exactly the education that you'll receive with my 6-week pregnancy call. You get access to my most comprehensive resource of everything I wish women knew before heading into motherhood. It's simultaneously a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 course, and postpartum planning class all in one. And now it's available not only during our live rounds, where you get tons of one-on-one support from me and a small group of like-minded women, but also in a lessons-only format. The lessons-only version of this course is just that. It's all of the content, but it's without the Q&A calls and without the group chat. This version is available on my website at all times, too. So log on to www.milkmedicine.com/lessonsonly to check it out, or you can go to the show notes for the link. I hope that you'll enjoy it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.